Thanks for listening to the podcast from Faith Radio Mornings.
Start your day connecting faith to life with Faith Radio Mornings.
Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. In 2 Timothy chapter 2, it says, "Again, I say, don't get involved in foolish, ignorant arguments that only start fights." You know, unless, it's over a parking space at the mall, then you might want to do that. I'm just kidding. "The Lord's servant must not quarrel, but must be kind to everyone. They must be able to teach effectively and be patient with difficult people. They should gently teach those who oppose the truth. Perhaps God will change those people's hearts, and they will believe the truth. Then they will come to their senses and escape from the devil's trap, for they have been held captive by him to do whatever he wants." Pastor Chip Ingram the other day laid out some really great wisdom on how Christians can easily walk out their faith in these polarized and very politically charged times. I'd like to think of them as really exciting times because the harvest field is huge. But here's a piece from that short talk.
"Refuse to be a part of foolish or ignorant speculation, knowing that they produce quarrels. Don't pass on information on the internet. Don't watch Fox News and believe everything this is that way. Don't watch MSNBC and believe everything's that way. Don't get involved in speculation. The Lord's bondservant must not be quarrelsome, but be kind to all."
Are we the kind of people at work or in our neighborhoods where they're drawn to us and they think, well, there's a guy that's kind of interesting, or there's a woman that's always so sweet and nice and stands strong in her convictions? And do we use words to build people up, or do we use words to tear people down? Maybe we're even doing that in our minds, tearing people down. So that's a danger as well, because the world will always be changing. And as believers, we need to stand strong on biblical truths and love people with radical grace, you know, kind of like the grace God gives us. But let's, as believers, make sure we bring light and hope rather than heat to all the conversations. Are there conversations that you're in right now at work or with neighbors or whoever where the words are building them up or tearing them down? What is the consensus? What do you have, more building up or more tearing down? What does it feel like to you right now in the world? Give us a call if you want to comment on that. 1-877-933-2484. We'd love to hear what you have to say about that. Are words that you're hearing building up others or tearing them down? What do you say? All right, 1-877-933-2484. We will promise to take calls if you want to give us a ring. It's 6 minutes after the hour. When we come back, Paul Goldsmith from Cure International. I have to say, this is one powerful ministry, and it's the ministry spotlight for the month here at Faith Radio. So very excited to talk to him, and we'll be back in just a minute. Minutes after the hour, Cure International is the ministry spotlight of the month here at Faith Radio, and I have Paul Goldsmith on from Cure International. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, your area code 312, is that, what is that, Chicago?
Yes, sir.
And
that's where I'm from.
Yo, nice. And what temperature do you have today?
Oh, you know, it's been a mild winter, so it's not too bad. Pretty nice. Going to be a good day.
Okay, because we're back to semi-freezing, which we can't stand. But I was on the web last night, and I watched the video of Ellen, and that ripped my heart out.
And you were checking out the Cure website, and every single story will rip your heart out. I was
no kidding.
Ellen who? Oh, of course, you're watching the Cure Kids. So it's really incredible. Incredible website. Bill, you were just talking about before the break, what kind of people do we want to be and sharing our faith?
No kidding.
I'll tell you, This is the kind of people I want to be. Join these doctors and nurses around the world that are restoring little bodies and sharing their faith by healing kids. And it will break your heart. So that's a fair warning. When you go to cure.org, you are going to be crushed, but in the best possible way, because that's what we do. Cure International heals kids and tells them about Jesus. And the best part is we're able to share their stories on the website in real time, so you can follow along with children like Ellen and see their recovery and wish them well, tell them you're praying for them, and we'll send those messages along, and oftentimes we'll even get them to send a message back. So thanks for checking that out. It really is quite incredible. There's nothing else like it where you can be a part of healing kids in real time.
Mm-hmm. Paul, I'm kind of a slow learner, but I want you to just kind of explain again what the mission of Cure International is, because it is reaching kids who need medical help in very desperate places, and also giving them the love of Jesus. Did I do a good job of that?
Well,
explain more.
Sure thing, Bill. It's pretty simple, really. When Jesus told his disciples, in the Bible, in Luke chapter 9, verse 2, Jesus sends out his disciples, and he says he wants them to proclaim his kingdom and heal the sick. And that's exactly what Cure's mission is: heal the sick and proclaim the kingdom of God. And we do that by having surgical hospitals in poor countries around the world, in places like Kabul, Afghanistan, in places like Niger and Ethiopia and India and Egypt. And we stitch together broken little bodies, and we tell them God loves them. And so Cure is just a bunch of doctors and nurses around the world healing kids and sharing the love of Jesus with kids and their families, and telling these kids who are told when they're born with a physical disability, something like club foot or a cleft lip or palate, they're told they're cursed by God. We tell them exactly the opposite. No, you're not cursed. You're blessed. You're loved by God. And it's because of people that listen to radio stations like this in the United States that go to the website, go to cure.org, they see the stories, they give, and their money goes directly to those hospitals to heal the kids.
So, Paul, these little kids, when they're told they're cursed and they're different and they feel horrible about themselves, one of the big problems that this video talked about was kids will start going into isolation, which is the opposite of what kids should be doing.
Absolutely. Well, I have three kids myself, and they just love to be with their friends and go out and play, and that's pretty universal, and kids love to be kids. And unfortunately, when a child is born with a disability, particularly in a developing country, they're not able to go out and play. And so they are kind of hidden away. And if they're seen as a curse, oftentimes their families will hide them and because they don't want others to see that.
Mm-hmm.
And so many times, unfortunately, mom gets blamed because the theology goes, if mom must have sinned, done something wrong to have a child with a physical disability. So these kids are isolated, and they're kept away from other kids, and they're often the last to eat. And oftentimes, when a child doesn't get the treatment they need, they're not able to go to school. And then they unfortunately end up as, you know, beggars. And we want to prevent all of that. And the great news is these aren't things we have to figure out. These are correctable disabilities. So we have the knowledge. We have the hospitals. We just need the resources to stitch these kids back together.
Mm-hmm. Paul, when you talk about these kids being told that they're like cursed, what is the origin of that? Is that a cultural, spiritual origin? Who is saying that, and where is that coming from? I'm curious. I know over here we talk about he's the black sheep of the family, and it's kind of meant as a backhanded compliment, but when you're cursing a kid, it's like, where does that come from? And that is unbelievably devastating to a little psyche and to probably the whole family.
Well, and it's contrary, obviously, to the God that we worship and follow. And so it's just wicked, cultural bad theology. Oftentimes these families are told to go to the local witch doctor and, give their last animal away to be able to pay the fees for this witch doctor to put together a potion to heal their kid. And when that doesn't work, they're out of options. So somebody tells them about Cure, and we tell them, no, you weren't cursed at all. You're loved by God. And that's the thing. More than the physical care, the spiritual and emotional care that goes on in these Cure hospitals is really the secret sauce, because when that child with that disability comes in the door for the first time, the staff go directly to the child and say how beautiful that baby girl is, or that boy. And they pick them up, and no stranger has ever picked up their deformed baby before.
Wow.
They've looked at them, with disgust, and it's like, no, you're loved, and we're so glad you're here. We can fix this. God sent you here. and he loves you, and we love you, and we're going to take care of you. And we get to know these families because while they're in for their surgical treatment, mom doesn't have the means for transportation to go back and forth. Oftentimes they come from 10, 12 hours away by bus. And so we mom sleeps in the bed right there next to the baby. We feed them three healthy, nutritious meals a day so they're healthy for surgery. And that gives our spiritual ministry team an opportunity to – they make the bedside rounds just like the medical staff does every single day and gets to know the family and tells them, you know, about the love of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you know, Bill, three-quarters of Jesus' miracles were healing people.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of get a crack out of people asking, you know, what would Jesus do? You got the bracelet WWJD? he would heal people, and that's exactly what his people are doing today around the world.
Right. Your description of doctors and nurses loving these children who wouldn't otherwise be picked up or touched by people produced lots of smiles and moistened eyeballs here in the studio. So we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more with Paul Goldsmith about Cure International, which is, in fact, the ministry spotlight for the month here at Faith Radio. And we're going to hear some more stories of children and families who have been changed by the ministry. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Minutes after the hour, welcome back. We're talking to Paul Goldsmith from Cure International. And Paul, I want to ask you, this is not a rescue mission where you barge in, because as fast as somebody barges in, they can also barge out just as fast. You're really trying to help build up the infrastructure of the medical help in the areas that you're going into and trying to establish something that is sustainable. Am I right?
Absolutely right. You're absolutely correct, Bill. In fact, Cure International isn't interested, you know, in taking over and colonizing. We are interested in coming alongside individuals in where they live, and we train up doctors and nurses so that they operate in their own country. So our neurosurgeons in Uganda are from Uganda, and so we come alongside. We employ the only neurosurgeons in Uganda and in places like Zambia. And so we come alongside and we bring the medical experience and expertise and we train them and then we help them and we back off. And so Cure has 1,500 staff members around the world, and less than 100 of us are Westerners and, you know, Americans. Our staff are from, you know, India, and we come alongside and we help them with guidance and instruction and training programs so that they're there for generations to come and not dependent on us.
Mm-hmm.
They just need the resources and the infrastructure to help treat children with correctable disabilities who otherwise just don't have access. You know, if your son or daughter breaks their leg, you know, playing soccer, you take them immediately to the ER and you get it fixed and you sort out how to pay for it later. In these places like India, and like Kenya and like Zambia, that's not how it works. And there just isn't the access to this surgical care. And so there's just no hope. These kids live with these broken bones and disabilities needlessly for years until someone comes alongside and tells them, you know, I heard about this Cure Hospital the Christians are doing. Go see the Cure Hospital, and they can treat this. The Cure is the leading provider of club foot treatment in the world. And it's not seen in the United States because when a baby's born with their feet pointed inward,
mm-hmm.
they treat it right up. It's easily correctable. And lots of children in the U.S. are born with that, but we fix it right at birth. And in India, that's not the case. In those sorts of situations, that you're just out of luck. And
mm-hmm.
so then the kids end up, you know, not being able to walk and not being able to go out and play soccer. And so we're fixing it as soon as we learn about it. And Cure is the number one provider in the world of club foot treatment, for example.
Yeah. Paul, do you have some ink in your passport? Have you been to some of these places and witnessed firsthand some of the things that we're talking about?
Oh, man, it's the coolest thing ever. So I have been to the Cure Hospital in the Dominican Republic, for example. So, you know, lots of folks go to the Dominican for vacation. There's definitely a tourism side
mm-hmm.
of that. what you don't see when you go on vacation is the rest of the population that lives in poverty. And those are such beautiful people. And to get to meet them, we celebrated a girl's 16th birthday. She was there for treatment at the CURE Hospital in Dominican Republic. It was the first birthday she ever celebrated. The CURE staff got a cake. It was a party. It's a CURE family. And so it's just a beautiful thing. That's just a hop and a skip, you know, from our shores here in the United States. And I've also, you know, been able, had a blessing to take a Christian music artist. Lauren Daigle is an up-and-coming artist and pretty popular these days, and she wanted to see a CURE hospital. So was able to join her in August visiting the CURE hospital in Zambia so she could play with the little kids in the ward and be able to sing to them and encourage them. And, you know, she fell in love and took us, you know, took CURE on her last concert tour. And so, and she found out about it. It's kind of funny. Just once you find out about it, you got to tell all your friends because it's like the greatest thing ever. She found out about it from her friend. You may have heard of him, Chris Tomlin. He writes a few songs.
No, I don't know who that is. But
I think he's got a big career ahead of himself. But he's on the board of directors of CURE. So if you go to CURE.org, you look at the staff, you look at the board of directors. Chris Tomlin, who doesn't put his name by something he doesn't believe in, is on the board of CURE and telling all of his friends. And so it's really great and leads to opportunities, you know, like this with Faith Radio.
Mm-hmm. So how about one more story of a child that you had a firsthand experience watching be healed? Because I love these stories.
Oh, every story, you just scroll the CURE website, and every story could be a movie. It's incredible. Wow. You're like, are you kidding me? That baby, it really... It brought it home to me when I was in the CURE hospital in Zambia, and I went into surgery, and I watched this four-month-old baby on the operating table, and the doctors obviously taking extreme care. They were doing brain surgery. This child had hydrocephalus, which is also sometimes called water on the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Her name was Grace, of all things.
Wow.
And I just watched it and, you know, tried not to pass out, not because it was bloody or anything like that. It's just the amazing miracle that was taking place. Grace would not survive that condition if she didn't receive treatment. That's a fatal condition. And her life was saved by that neurosurgeon, that Zambian neurosurgeon, went into her brain and, you know, fixed it up so that she wouldn't keep retaining water. Her head wouldn't grow larger and larger until, you know, it was fatal. She's going to have a completely different life. So later that afternoon, I walk into the ward, and Grace is laying in the bed. Her mom's just sitting right there. And, you know, it just struck me. Their entire trajectory of their life is completely different.
Mm.
And then I was, you know, just on the website, CURE.org, later that day, and we had the picture of Grace. And I know I work for CURE, so I take for granted, of course, we tell the kids stories. But literally that baby's face was on the website that day. And this is the real deal, folks. It's not, you know, stock photos. We take one picture of one kid. It's no. Every kid is treated with dignity. We know their name. We know their mom's name. We know their story. And we're sharing those stories with folks that just want to come alongside. A surgery in the United States, you know, it's ridiculous, the expense and all of that, and we're debating that right now in our government. The beautiful thing is we cut through all of that. A surgery, average cost is $1,000. We can transform a child's life.
Wow. Right?
That's incredible.
I
so
love it.
Not everybody can do $1,000, so some folks, you know, come alongside, and we basically work together as a church, as a body, and give what we can and heal kids together month after month.
Yeah, Paul, I love your passion. And the website is CURE.org. Go on there, watch some of those videos, and you will know what we're talking about. And reaching for your wallet will be easy. Trust me. It is 26 minutes after the hour. We'll be right back. Okay, after the news, Dr. Ann Bradley is going to be on the studio line. We're going to talk to her about a number of things, one being the Obamacare replacement plan, Will it solve the economic problems? She's really smart. I'm looking forward to it. Be back in a minute. Good morning. Many of us have had our dreams dashed and hopes not realized. Speaker and author Lisa Bevere says while the temptation might be to pull back and stop dreaming, we can get into God's Word, pray in a new way, and get a fresh vision for our lives.
Faith is the substance of things hoped for. There are a lot of people that are afraid to dream because they are so intimately acquainted with disappointment. So they just pull back. They stop dreaming. They stop being bold. They just shut it down. But what happens is sometimes something wakes up inside of you and you feel this quickening of life. You might be reading the scriptures or you might see some outrage and think, I want to help be a part of that. I want to help with that. Or somebody might just listen to what you guys are doing and said, man, I can make something count. I want to be gracious and generous to somebody else. This might be a sacrifice for me, but I'm going to do this because something inside of you opens up and capacity for God is there.
To find the full interview on our website, go to myfaithradio.com. You can hear all of the interview with Lisa. We'll take a short break. When we come back, Dr. Ann Bradley on the line. Very excited to talk to her. Be back in a minute.
Parents who've been divorced often ask me this question. What should I do when my ex enforces different rules with the kids? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Maintaining consistency in your teen's life can be a challenge, especially if she spends part of her week somewhere else. But be careful not to change the boundaries, rules, and consequences in your home just to make it more attractive place to be. You should always keep your child's best interest at heart, regardless of what your ex does or doesn't do. Kids are resilient in these situations. As your teen grows older, she'll gravitate toward the parent she believes wanted the best for her. And one day, she'll look back and thank you for helping her get to a better place.
Dreading the next big fight with your teen? Get Mark's 7 Characteristics of a Good Argument. You can download them for free online at ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
Thirty-eight minutes after the hour, I'm going to talk to Dr. Ann Bradley. She's on the studio line. I'm going to like to talk about my vocabulary word of the day, and I will use it in a sentence. My vocabulary word of the day is agita. And I will now use it in a sentence. Obamacare news. My stomach can't take this agita. How about that? Hey, and welcome to the show. You know, last time we spoke, it was your birthday. So I want to say, what did your husband buy that you had to return?
Oh, well, we have an agreement that for my birthday, he lets me go shopping and pick out my own thing. And I actually think that works well for both of us.
He is a ridiculously smart man.
He is smart.
Because he doesn't have to go all through the anxiety of getting the wrong. He'd have a Jita going shopping for you.
That's exactly right. That's right.
All right. Let's talk about the proposed Obamacare replacement plan. And is it going to solve our economic problems from Obamacare?
Well, from what I know about it in the kind of the last few days that this has been what Washington has been talking about, and I don't see that it is going to solve the problems. And that in and of itself, I think, is a really big concern we should have because, I mean, the thing we have to give Obama and Obamacare is that they identified a problem, which is that the health care system was broken. I don't think Obamacare fixed it. I think it created some other problems and was, you know, one of the big criticisms of Obamacare is that it's loaded with regulations, and these regulations make it very hard for health insurance companies to provide health care and to provide insurance for people because you can't, you know, you have to be very careful about the price you're charging and the coverage. There's so many regulations that govern that. And what we see coming out of the Republicans or what they've proposed is that it's not going to undo any of those regulations that are causing the health insurance market to crash. So I'm very concerned about that. So, no, I don't think it's fixing the problems. I think we need to get back to basics and think about what are the things that are going to really increase affordability and increase access, particularly for people who are vulnerable and sick. That's who we really want to focus on, and I don't think this plan does that.
Mm-hmm. I was hearing Ted Cruz speak about his plan or what he thinks should be done, and he really cited two principles. One was honor our promise, which was we've been talking about doing this forever, for at least the last 6 years. And the second one is let's not make it worse. And it seems that this new plan, I'm just wondering how viable and cost effective it's going to be and how we make this dog hunt.
Exactly. And I think that those sentiments are correct. Congress and the president have made a big promise to the American people. And so they're going to have to find a way to fulfill that promise. And sometimes fulfilling those types of promises means undoing regulations and letting the market work, and doing it quickly so that these markets don't crash. I think you're absolutely right. And some of the problems that, one of the other things I'll say is that there's not a lot of support, even among Republicans broadly, at least in the past few days. So I'm hopeful that that means that we're going to change some of the issues with it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this is just going to get speedy approval and they're going to move on to other things. And frankly, the Republicans need to be smart about this because strategically, if they mess up health care and it gets worse, they are going to be blamed for it, even though it kind of started 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that could lead us to a single-payer system or something, far more restrictive and far more intrusive in terms of this, kind of being provided by the state. So they need to be strategic about really doing something that works. we would hope that on principle they'd want to do that anyway, but I think politically it's suicide if they don't. There's a lot of issues.
Yeah, the businessman side of our president would want things done swiftly. The politician side of the way stuff works would say this thing is going to take forever.
Exactly, and I think you're right about that. And I think that the problem with politicians and just any politician is that they tend to have pretty short time horizons. They need to get things done. And they need things to operate well based on their promises so that they can get reelected. So when you think about a presidential campaign, campaigning starts 2 years after you've already won the first election. So you're right about that. I mean, I think the businessman side of Trump wants it to be done. But business is a lot easier to manipulate than politics. When he runs a business, he makes a decision and people have to say okay to the extent that he can make business decisions. You can't do that as a president. You need a lot of buy-in. And there's a lot of ripple effects. And so it's not going to be very easy to just say, this is what I want you to do, do it. It doesn't work like that.
Right.
And that's probably a good thing, right? That protects us from tyranny. So,
yeah. I think it would be wise if we had 1 6-year term as president, because it seems like you get the job and you spend 2 years trying to learn how to do the job, the next 2 years trying to get the job again for 4 more years. Seems like if we had 1 6-year term, we'd say, all right, that's it. There's no campaigning and no re-election bid and all that.
Right, and then you have time to actually kind of get to work and do some
things.
It
seems that way, but am I the only one with good ideas around here?
I think maybe.
Yeah,
why don't you move to Washington? We need some more good ideas there.
Thank you, Ann. Finally, someone that's speaking sense. All right. Now let's shift gears here a little bit. The women who marched yesterday, now I have a feeling you didn't march because I know your value and I thank you, so keep up the great work. But what did you think about that yesterday as a woman?
You know, here's the thing. I really think it's great to celebrate the role of all people in the workplace, women included. And, I understand the cause of the day and the reason for the celebration. There was a time when women were kind of predestined to marry somebody that their parents chose for them, right? And there was a time when women, no matter what they wanted to do for a living, they couldn't do those things. They didn't have equality under the law. So to celebrate that reform and that change, I think, is wonderful and brilliant and good. And as a woman, who's an economist, I can't turn away from that. However, I find it interesting. In fact, two local school counties in my area closed. They closed school yesterday so that teachers who are women could have the day off. And to me, that is a little odd because what the women before us fought so hard for is for us to have the right to work if we wanted to, right? I mean, for us to have freedoms. And so to not work on a day when women before you fought so hard for you to be able to work seems odd to me.
Yeah.
So, kind of when I see the marches and things like that, I have to wonder, what are we marching for? Are we marching for equality under the law? That's a good thing. I'll join that march. But are we marching for, you know, kind of special treatment or to have the day off just because we feel like it? It's hard for me to get behind that.
Yeah. All right, Ann, we'll take a little break. When we come back, I want to ask you about gender wage gap. Is it the theory versus reality? It's 46 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us this morning on Faith Radio. I'll be right back. Minutes after the hour, I'm talking to Dr. Ann Bradley, an economist from the Institute for Faith, Work, and Economics. I could never be an economist, never, because first of all, I haven't really been able to balance my checkbook since high school. So that would be problem number one. But the last conversation we had before break, we were talking about Obamacare news, and that made my stomach have a jita. That's my vocabulary word of the day. I want to move on to the gender wage gap, which does not cause a jita.
Yeah, well, it does for some people.
I know it does, but not me. So let's talk about the theory versus the reality.
Yes, I really enjoy this conversation. It keeps coming up, and I think it's an important one to have. But I will say this up front. I think there's a lot of reasons to be hopeful in terms of the gender wage gap going away. I would also encourage us to think about the long history of women and their labor participation rate. So, you know, you don't want to just focus on today. You want to focus on the past 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. And if you look at that, that's why I have a lot of reason for hope. So a lot of statistics, the Bureau of Labor Statistics puts out reports on this, and they show that it's about, you know, depending on how you look at the data, between 75 cents and 89 cents what women make relative to men. So for every dollar a man makes, a woman makes between 75 cents and 89 cents. And you say, okay, women aren't getting paid. If I look at that data, I say women aren't getting paid as much as men. What is going on? And if we look at it and we saw systemic discrimination, that actually women are applying for jobs and being turned down because they're women, if we see that on net, we have a problem. We have a societal problem. And that really, you know, as a Christian, I firmly believe that we were created to work. And I think you get that right from Genesis. And so we need to encourage and agitate for a society which encourages all people to work however God has called them. I mean, I could tell you, myself as a woman, God calls me to be a wife and a mother and an economist. And so there's a lot of juggling that I have to do there, and all of us have to do that. So we want a society where we can go where God leads us. That's first and foremost. So we don't want systemic discrimination, but I'm not sure that in the U.S. that's what's explaining it. I think it was 50 years ago. But I think, actually, if you look at that wage gap, it's narrowing more and more. And actually, if you do more sophisticated studies where you compare men and women who have almost exactly the same characteristics, in other words, they have the same major, they're unmarried versus married, then the wage gap almost goes away. So if you compare a man and a woman, both of whom are unmarried, both of whom have the exact same degree, the wage gap disappears almost entirely. It's about 2 cents. So 98 cents to a dollar. And that's good news. So what we're really finding is that 75 to 89 cents is happening because of choices women make. Mm-hmm. They want to travel less. They want to work more flexible hours, more part-time. Women tend to go into majors like education and psychology, not as much engineering and science. And so, you know, I think we can make progress on those margins, but we also want women to be able to choose. You know, if they want to be a teacher because it allows them to stay home with the kids they want to have one day, we should encourage that choice as well.
Mm-hmm. So you're really thinking it's more of a myth than reality.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, it used to be reality. It
oh,
used
I agree.
To be very much reality. Mm-hmm. But, yes, it's going away. And so it's much more of a reality that a young woman who's 18 and going to college can choose to be a physics major, do that successfully, go on to get a PhD, and earn as much as her male counterpart. What I will say is that if she chooses to have children, you know, children are a wonderful blessing, but they also require a lot of care. And so a man and a woman have to make a choice about who's going to stay home. You know, are they going to go to daycare? And those are the types of things that tend to interrupt careers. And those are usually borne by women. Now, I'm all for women being able to make that choice. So what you really want is daycare costs to go down, women to have a lot of telework opportunities, because these are going to be the things that allow them to continue working, maybe part-time, while they're raising their children, then go back into the labor force later. So, yeah, I think the old reality is now a myth. I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
And we're closing the gap, and that's exciting.
Yeah. Anne, our producer Rebecca has a question for you. Rebecca?
As a working woman. No less. So I'm very glad to get to talk to Dr. Bradley. Anne, I love your wisdom on this. I recognize that there are a couple of concerns when we have this discussion, the first of which I'm thinking is we usually jump, when gender wage gap is brought up, we jump straight to a policy solution for whether or not we even decide if it's real or if it's substantiated by what the causes are. It's automatically, well, now we need to propose some sort of government regulation in order to fix this. And that makes me a little bit nervous. So I wonder if you might speak to that and why that might not be the direction we'd want to go.
Well, Rebecca, I think you'd make a fine economist. I think your insight there is a good one, because you're right. We tend to see a problem in society, and our first reaction is to jump to go to the state for the solution, to regulate. And I don't think that this is actually what has changed women's participation in the workforce. I actually think that it's things like women having enough free time to leave the home so that they can work. You're a working woman, I'm a working woman, right? We wouldn't be able to go to work if we didn't have washing machines. That's an example, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because in the days where you had to go by a riverbed and wash the clothes by hand, that took so much time, you couldn't leave the home. So it's actually these modern-day appliances and gadgets that we have that allow us more opportunities, like I said, to work part-time, to work flex time. You know, you have an infant and you're up in the middle of the night, maybe you could get some work done. And the more flexibility we have, and what we're seeing is that employers naturally want the most talented people. And to the extent that a lot of those are women, they're willing to allow people to have more flexible schedules. So I think a lot of this organically, as you identify, is coming through the market. Because what do employers want to do? They want to make a profit. And how do they make a profit? By hiring the most talented people. And if some of your most talented people are women, then you have a natural incentive to try to accommodate them. And we're seeing these are the real changes outside of policy that we're seeing that I think allow me and you and others like us to go to work.
I have to say, you two have it made, because after the show, I'm going down to the riverbed to wash my britches. So.
You don't want to do that.
I don't want to do that. But, Anne, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for bringing such an enlightened perspective to subjects that I find very difficult to understand sometimes, especially all the wranglings that are going on in Washington. So thanks for being on the show, and have a great day.
You too. Thanks for having me, Bill.
You bet. Thanks. It's 55 minutes after the hour. We'll be back in just a minute. Minutes after the hour, we're wrapping up Faith Radio Mornings today. Did you know that today, well, it's Happy Thursday for sure, but National Meatball Day? I don't know what that means. Meatballs are, you know, if they're not your thing, okay, maybe it's also National Crab Meat Day. But here's my favorite one. If none of these topics you care about at all, you can also know that it's National Get Over It Day. That works for me on a lot of levels. All right, 2 Timothy 1:9 says, He saved us and called us to a holy life, not because of anything we have done, but because of His own purpose and grace. This grace was given us in Christ Jesus before the beginning of time. And that's something to think about as we go off today. And we were talking about what Chip Ingram said. Let's not get into big arguments with people. Let's not be part of foolish or careless speculation when we're sharing stories that we hear on the news and things that are going to stir up the heat in the conversation. But let's be gentle and kind and loving and full of grace. And let's not use words to tear people down. Let's try to find words to build people up. We'll be known by our love. How cool is that? The world is in turmoil right now. There's lots of people that are hurting, and you don't have to look too far to find someone that could use some gentle, kind, loving encouragement and words. Make eye contact with them. Let them know you care. And open up the conversation. Maybe lead them to Christ. Maybe today is their day of salvation. Keep that radio station tuned right here to Faith Radio. We've got lots of great programming on all day. I hope you have. I hope you have a great day. God bless. I'll see you tomorrow morning.
Thanks for listening to this Faith Radio Mornings podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Faith Radio Mornings, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or on your podcast player. And thanks for sharing the audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Faith Radio Mornings.